Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Thanks to the brilliant Jenny Green, it's Monday the 8th of June and this is Game On.
Coming up today, sport is back, lads. Ruby casts his eye over today's return to racing in Nace.
Panita Aurora with a wet sail on the near side. All change, Panita Aurora and Shane Foley on the near side for a hat-trick. Alligator Alley is second, Pistoletto is third, and fourth, 13, American Lady.
He had him on Friday, guys, and he didn't give you any of those winners. Shane Foley has had a treble, but coming up today as well, Dundalk FC manager Vinnie Park is with us after his side returned to training today.
A jockey who doesn't give tips. Who'd have thought it?
We have to ring him back. And we've the latest from the Premier League news as it returns to action, edges closer.
Game on 2FM.
You can get in touch by texting us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. Now, I had the most welcome sight this morning when I opened the Examiner newspaper.
Well,
a list of fixtures, summer of sport. It's back, and they have what's coming up for the next few months. And it was just so nice to see. I think there's just like they've all the big dates of Premier League and Six Nations, Champions League finals, golf, just loads of things to look forward to.
It's even beyond that. It's broken down into the day. And like the time, like Marie, I'd say you were basically out with the diary. Just here we go.
What jumped out at you? Go on, you looked at it. There was dates and titles and sports all over the place. But which ones jumped out at you? What did you think? I can't wait to see that.
Well, what jumped out with me was that the Premier League is starting again in September. And it's like, can we just get the first one over with and then we'll worry about the one that's coming next?
Yeah, I look straight at the rugby, the New Zealand rugby back, and as we heard there in the news, with crowds, which is massive news. I think when we're all looking for hope and normality to actually see, supporters at the grounds, and that's because they've gone 17 days without a positive test, to be fair to them. We were chatting about it before, Ruby, they'd locked down their country, but they're reaping the rewards now.
Yeah, but I think it's a much different situation to any other country. Well, definitely does. I mean, we have the north of Ireland attached to us and with different quarantine rules in the UK. Even though we're a small island, it's a totally different situation. And I think New Zealand is on its own there, where it is, crowds. But I mean, they can have domestic sport. How long before they will have any sort of international sport? I think they're in a much different situation than anybody else.
When it comes to rugby, they're not bothered. They'd gladly pay themselves. And they're good enough. It'll be box office stuff. It's going to be great. Can't wait.
It will, and it'll be entertaining. But look, it's great to have it back, and there will be crowds there. But I'm not as optimistic for crowds anywhere else other than New Zealand. Marie, what do you think?
Hang on a second there, Ruby. You're not that optimistic for crowds, but John Horn, the GAA president, is very optimistic about crowds. He thinks, or he hopes, that the association might have 42,000 fans attending games later in the year if restrictions are eased. He was speaking to Nafina Television, his own club. Let's hear from him.
We've already worked it out that if the government shouldn't large crowds to gather over, what they have at the moment of 5,000, we could probably put 21,000 into Croke Park safely. The operations team in Croke Park have mapped it out. Obviously, that blue mesh that's used in Croke Park would be used to block off seats, but we feel we could get a crowd safely into Croke Park of 21,000. It would cause practicalities in terms of there'd be an element of lottery for tickets, and premium ticket holders would probably have to get a credit into the following year and just do a lottery on the tickets that are actually there available for games going forward. But until social distancing is scaled back, we just won't be able to pack Croke Park, no. But it is our intention to get it open and going when we get the inter-county games going. And, if it goes back to 1 metre, we'd be able to double the attendance, probably to 42,000. There's an issue over the hill whether we'd have to put seating in there, because really controlling crowds and terraces is always going to be a nightmare going forward.
Marie, is that the same John Horan that said they couldn't have GAA games while social distancing rules were in existence?
Ruby, that is the same John Horan that sent the GAA community into the depths of despair only a few weeks ago, suggesting that there would be no Gaelic Games action while social distancing was in place. Things have changed, obviously. The outlook of the country has changed from a health point of view, and in fairness, the GAA have reacted to that. But it does seem like it was only a few weeks ago when we thought there would be no GAA, and now it looks like in a very short space of time we will have fans in probably provincial grounds, and then maybe further down the line, quite a lot of fans in Croke Park.
I don't know. Social distancing is at 2 metres, right? So if they say they can do that at 21,000 people who get into Croke Park with social distancing of 2 metres apart, how do you social distance them all the way into Croke Park and out of Croke Park, and when they come out of Croke Park? This is the guy that wouldn't open the clubs because they couldn't man, or the club grounds, because they couldn't man who was going in and who was coming out, yet he still thinks he'll manage to get 21,000 in and out of Croke Park without there being any gathering.
Did you see the queues for IKEA today? Picture that.
Well, if we're that organised, we'd be
fine. Go again.
Could the Clare crowd leave at this time and the Kerry crowd leave at that time?
Yeah, in fairness, it is quite hard to imagine how that will happen in just a few months' time. But when you think about it, just a few months ago, even though New Zealand's numbers were low, did we ever expect that in June they would be holding full stadiums of fans to watch games?
Or even the French. They've called off all their soccer now, and I think they're probably looking at the Premier League coming back, looking at the Bundesliga playing away and thinking we could be back out there. So I suppose the news that, you know, John Horne knew at that time, you're not having that, Ruby, look. He's like, no.
This is John Horne. I wanted nothing to be on. And now wants everything to be back the same way as it always was. I mean, I just can't figure the man out at all.
I think the hope, there was no hope there for a while. And that was what everybody really struggled with. I mean, if the message...
And him as a leader wouldn't be there to give us some hope, maybe, no?
Well, that's a fair assumption. But I guess he had to stay within the guidelines of the government. And at that time, it was quite difficult to see how we would be in this stage of the restrictions easing at this time.
Can I ask a question?
And just one other thing before I let you off the hook, Marie, on the GAA. I also read in the paper today where John Horne said the crowds to gather over the 5,000 that are already allowed. Where is that?
That is not out yet. Now, Simon Harris was asked about large gatherings, and he predicted that we would see large gatherings in October. I imagine that anyone who is in the higher echelons of the sports administration probably has a bit of a fairer idea of what's happening or going to happen coming down the track than we would, the general public.
Very true. 42,000 is still decent, though, in Croke Park, wouldn't it?
A lottery system, though. And do you know what will happen is...
How do you get in?
Exactly. Somebody like you, Dunica, will end up now with a ticket, and I'll be left sitting at home on the couch. A person who just goes to all Ireland finals.
Absolutely.
And those type of people. There's going to be war when that happens.
That's why John Hayes, I've told you about that before. He slapped me going into the Limerick Galway game. He was there wasted.
A girl I worked with, who I will not name now, remember when Munster and Leinster were playing in Croke Park and it was impossible to get tickets for it? People were clamouring, trying to track them down. She managed to get one, and she's from Leinster, and she said to me, I'm just going to go up to the shops now and buy a green jersey for Leinster. She hadn't a clue, and she got a ticket. So lotteries, they're just
what
not
would
fair.
You prefer, though? Would you prefer what they're doing in La Liga, using virtual imaging for the crowd? So we've heard, we've chatted about this before, the noise they make for it. They're using it in the NRL, so when they make a break in the rugby game, the crowd cheers. But now they're chanting in the La Liga to use kind of video gaming so that you can actually see a crowd and see the crowd moving. Any interest?
It's like a Zoom call when someone puts in a virtual background, and when they move their head out of the virtual background, it goes all fuzzy. So the ball will disappear through the virtual background. You think, oh, the ball's gone off the pitch. Nah. Come on, just play them in. Play away. Get the games on. It's about the sport, not about who's sitting above in the stand.
Simulated chance. I mean, anyone who's been to a Premier League match will know that the chants that you hear there are not very clean, so I'd say they'll have to adopt very different, or a lot of beeping with the chants that they simulate in the Premier League. Sky Sports are working with EA Sports FIFA division to create these, and crowd noise as well, but the chants could be interesting.
Well, it'll be one way of getting rid of racial abuse.
That's true.
Could Ruby coming up with good ideas again?
The best way of stopping it.
Yeah. And it could teach people, couldn't it? Use it as a bit of an educator. Marie, you must be excited. Derry, Dundalk, Bowes, Rovers, all back training.
I had a great day today because of social media. I tweeted and said, you know, Twitter are for days like this. You could just scroll through and see all the people training and out in the pool and just all around kind of getting back into the action. Can you imagine today, lads, if you were still professional athletes like you were once upon a time, heading back training, meeting your teammates, meeting your colleagues for the first time after not seeing them for months, after not knowing what was coming down the track? What a special day today would have been.
How would you be on that, Ruby? First day of school or just, come on, let's get on with this?
Well, because horse race and horses were always considered to be essential, they never stopped training, so it wouldn't be like the first day back at school for us, Marie. And there was action yesterday. The Guineas were on in Newmarket. They were on Saturday and Sunday. There was racing in Ace today. Racing was positive and we're so far ahead of the rest of you, it's unbelievable. We're back up and running because we wanted to be. Not looking for ways to stop, looking for ways to do it.
And we did have the chat before about how it's an opportunity for racing to gather new fans and new eyeballs. And I was one of those people on Saturday. I was chilling out, doing nothing. And then I went, it's nearly 3:30. Time for the Guineas.
Guineas.
Better get in out of the sunshine and turn it on. And
your man, Oisin Murphy, Kerry man, on Cameco.
Yeah, was killed.
Beat with cheat of Aidan O'Brien's pin at 2 by the hot favourite, was only third, but it was a great race and a first classic for Oisin Murphy. And Wexford man PJ MacDonald had a treble on the card as well, so the Irish jockeys were to the fore on Saturday. And on Sunday, Oisin Murphy had a treble and Aidan O'Brien won the Guineas with Love, ridden by Ryan Moore, and she looked really good.
Give us a bit of context on Oisin Murphy's career. Is he kind of at the start of coming good, Ruby, or is he kind of well into it now?
Oh, he's well into it, Marie. He was champion apprentice in the UK. His uncle would have been, Jim Cullity, who rode Best Mate. And Oisin has been a talent from a very young age. He's tactically a very, very good rider, and he's ridden a lot of winners around the world globally. He's ridden big winners in Japan, Australia, America, and tactically to be able to adapt from one country to the other can take a bit of doing, and Oisin is right up there with it. And he's very much a new generation jockey. I mean, he's used to social media, the way he deals with the actual media. He's very outgoing and he's very good for the sport.
On Saturday evening, I think it was Saturday evening, or it might have been Friday evening actually, in the car after racing, and he went through all the horses that he'd ridden and gave his thoughts on them. And it was just someone else was driving, but like you mentioned, the social media thing, and it was a really good way of connecting with racing fans. So it was like a minute and a half, and I sat there and watched it, and he was going through the different horses, what he thought, why he thought that they went the way they did, or he went the way that he did. And it was just brilliant access and kind of engagement. And as you said, like, it's a good way for people who aren't that into horse racing to connect with it. So fair play to him. And you mentioned the tactics as well, Ruby. Now, I don't know a huge amount about racing tactics, but what he did on Saturday looked like it was pretty clever.
He did the right thing. He was drawn, obviously, on 15 under the stands rail. Watching it back, he could have stayed where he was, Marie, and got to run through between William Bruick and Frankie Dettori. Instead, he opted to move right and came around the outside of Frankie. It didn't matter, he still won the race, but I'd say looking back on it, he would have thought, I could have stayed left and gone a bit shorter. But it was, look, the horse looked a really good horse, and he'd head on to the Epsom Derby, which is on July the 4th.
You're looking at the exam right there, because it's all there. But just on Oisin, you're talking about the tactics there, Ruby. Do you know as soon as they come out, you know, within the first few seconds, is it all about the start? Is it like the 100 metres?
No, it's not so much like the 100 metres, but, and a race can't be won at the start, Dunica, but they can be lost. And it's not so much the decision you make. You can make the right decision, but the guys around you can make decisions that can interfere with what you do. Like when the stalls opened on Saturday, Adre Adzini was drawn right beside Oisin Murphy. He broke quite sharply and he cut left across in front of Oisin. But with that, the rest of the field moved left as well, so it didn't really matter. Oisin was in a lovely position right behind Ryan Moore with William Bewick outside him on Pinatubo. He just ended up in a beautiful position that just happened for him. And, you know, you can get lucky sometimes in races, but Oisin Murphy has a habit of being in the right place at the right time.
Good habit to have.
All the good ones do.
Yeah. So we mentioned a little bit earlier that swimming came back today. So our top athletes finally got back in the pool because we had talked about how difficult it was for them seeing their counterparts across Europe, getting back into training and getting that little bit of an edge. John Kenny, RTÉ Sport reporter, went out this morning to check it out, and he spoke to national team coach Ben Higson.
Relief and excitement are probably the two words that come to mind. And you know, I think it's a great day for the athletes, and you know, to be back training towards Tokyo is monumental. Mm. Myself personally, with all the athletes, you know, we've been trying to touch base with them on a daily basis via online platforms or phone calls, and I've probably seen more of them in terms of face-to-face online than I would in the water. So it's been different, it's been a challenge, and you know, I think we adapted as best we could to it, but like you know, nothing beats being in the water or being sport specific.
You've got to stagger things. You've got about six swimmers in the pool this morning. Divers are coming back on Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, safety and compliance is the number one thing, and it's certainly at the forefront of all our minds. And you know, we're going to run 3x2-hour sessions across the day because we'll have various athletes coming from various places, and just to ensure that we can social distance in the water. You know, that'll be in place until we're told otherwise. But you know, first and foremost, we're just grateful to be back.
And a case of resetting as well, with the Olympic Games pushed down the road 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the postponement of the Olympic Games is going to be beneficial to Swim Ireland. I think we're on an upward trajectory, and I think that as long as we can get these guys back into shape safely, and we will have a fantastic Olympics come 12 months' time, and I think we're going to be in a place where more people than ever make the team, because we've got some great up-and-coming youngsters, and we have some senior athletes that are performing to their best, you know, in the last few years, so it's fantastic.
And that was Ben Higson, national coach with Swim Ireland, speaking to John Kennier earlier today. It's the small things, isn't it? Listening to the sound of the water in the background, you know, it just kind of gives you a nice feel for sport.
But normally that would be wild, wouldn't it? With kids going crazy all around the place. And swimming pools are noisiest places of all time. Play that back, hopefully, in a few months' time, and you'll be remembering it was like that.
It was good to hear him mention
But swimming is one sport. Sorry, Marie.
No, go on. You've got kids swimming. You know all
no,
about
but
it.
Swimming is a sport where mileage and repetition is so important. And for those swimmers to be out of the pool for so long, like how far they will have drifted back in their preparation and their training, they'd be one of the hardest ones to get back.
Yeah, and he mentioned though as well that they're going to have more qualified than ever before because they had so many young kids who were coming through that probably the break would have done them good, as in like giving them that extra time, knowing that they didn't have an Olympics in a few months, that now they have an Olympics in a year's time, so they can hopefully get the standards that they need.
All the positive self-talk. I am so fresh. They'll all be going around thinking they're flying it. What I wouldn't do to jump in a pool myself, I'll be completely honest with you. Does anyone else miss going for a dip?
No, I don't swim.
Fair enough.
You're on your own.
Oversharing again.
But the divers are back tomorrow. So as John mentioned, John Kenny there, that the divers will be back in the pool tomorrow. So imagine trying to get back into those routines. It will be quite hard. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We have loads coming up. Jessica Harrington is going to be on chatting to us about Nace today. Vinnie Perth on his return to the training pitch today. And of course, Premier League news.
Game on 2FM.
Well, welcome back to Game On. As we said earlier, the racing started back in Ireland today, and it was at Nace. And one woman who has hit the ground running is Jessica Harrington. She was second in the first race with Roses Blue before Lucky Vega won the second and Punita Aurora won the Committed Stakes. Jessica, how are you? You've had a flying start.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Like, you know, you're always nervous when you have had a long break like that. Whether the horses are in good form, and probably I got a little bit of wind taken out of my sails yesterday when Mill Isle didn't really run up to expectations in the Guineas, so I was probably even more nervous today. But listen, it you know, so far so good.
And was it a bit strange, sat at home watching? I know trainers often would watch them home at busy times, but not being able to go, being over 70, you're not allowed to attend. Was it strange being at home? Did you feel like you had less control?
Yeah, it's just not being there to sort of just get the vibe, you know, the vibe off the horse, the vibe off the jockey, you know, and that's a bit strange. You know, quite often I would stay at home and watch it on the telly, but fact that I'm not going to, and in between races I couldn't sit and watch the other races. I had to go out and do a bit more shaving in my garden.
You do enjoy more your grass. It's been well documented that's what you do to I suppose go missing. But so from a tactics point of view, did you discuss every race today with Shane Foley as to what was going to happen, or were you in contact through the day with him?
I wasn't in contact during the day. He was in this morning, and he said, oh, I suppose I better talk to you about what I'm going to do. And quite honestly, I basically leave it up to him. He's the one there. I've trained them. he's got to ride them, and he's got to ride them how he feels them, because that's, you know, things can change. And, you know, the 2 2-year-olds, they both jumped well, travelled well, and more or less went as we thought. We knew with Punta Aurora that she's been having difficulties in stalls because she's been rearing, coming out of them. And I just said, look, just pop her out. And he said, well, I'll then, you know, whatever happens, we'll just follow them up and they'll go very hard and it should suit her. And that's really all the instructions I gave him. You know, he's the jockey. He knows better how to do it than I do.
I used to love those kind of instructions when it was left up to yourself, be you right or wrong. You had a free hand to do what you wanted. But even looking back on Punta Aurora, and she's only a 3-year-old, that was her first win at listed level. Have you any target for her going forward?
Not really. I suppose I could put in the Commonwealth Cup into the mix if there was good quick ground in Ascot. She loves top of the ground. You know, I sent her to Ascot last year to run in a 2-year-old, 6-furlong 2-year-old race there. And unfortunately, she reared over backwards in the stalls, and that's when all our problems started. I thought she was a very good filly last year, but, you know, things didn't go right for her after that. I'll just see what's going to come up. But, like, I think she is a good filly, and I think she took on the colts and geldings today and beat them well. So I'll have a chat to Shane and see what he thinks.
And as you said, Mill Isle didn't run up to expectations yesterday in the Kipco 1,000 guineas. Is she home yet, and did anything come to light with her?
She's home. Only thing that came to light was she was a bit fresh and a bit free in the first couple of furlongs, and that's what Oisin said. And then she didn't really come down the hill, but funnily enough, she stayed on very well at the end, so I think there's no doubt that she will stay a mile.
That's good, and looking forward to next weekend. Obviously the classics are coming up at the Curragh. You have Free Solo in the 2,000 guineas, Albina and Valeria Mussolina in the 1,000 guineas. You must be excited after where your horses ran today.
Yeah, just getting very exciting, and you know, it's just such a funny year. Normally this excitement is spread out, and you know, and you have a sort of building up, and you have a build up, and you have disappointment. This year, it's all coming in one go. It's like you've been suddenly let into the sweetie shop, and you have to grab as much as you can.
The 1,000 guineas is Saturday, and it's Monday now. Has Albina all her work done, or will she be working in the morning doing her final piece?
I should do a breeze in the morning. I think that then will keep her moving to try and keep the freshness off her all week. You know, she's going to be very fresh going there. And I just like to try and keep the lid on her.
That'd be a bit of a help, I suppose. Well, you wouldn't put earplugs or anything in her to help her with that freshness or something tactical.
No. I know, because there's not going to be any atmosphere. It's very different if we were, you know, going into a normal Guineas with, you know, the noise and the atmosphere. It's going to be very quiet there. And I think they'll probably, you know, it'll be sort of eerily quiet. So I think that from that point of view, I don't think there's any need to.
Leopardstown is tomorrow. Jessie, have you many runners there?
I have. One second, I can tell you now exactly. I have in Leopardstown tomorrow, I have six runners.
Six. Five. Obviously, the sixth one doesn't count. You couldn't remember it. That'd be a nice 2-year-old running. You had a couple of nice ones today.
It's reserve. And it won't get in, probably. It may get in, but it may not. I run a couple of nice fillies in the fillies trial over 7 furlongs, Celestial Object and In the Present, and I run 2 nice maidens, Unknown Pleasures and Hint of Stars. So those are basically the ones.
Good, and you'll have Free Solo, I believe, in the 2,000 guineas. Has he improved over the winter?
I hope so. He's only run twice. Because he had, after he won his maiden, he had a few problems, and so we couldn't get to run him again. And I think he's improved. Yes, I think he's a nice horse. He won his maiden by 5 lengths, so, you know, I'm expecting a big run from him.
Well, I hope one of them goes in for you. Albina, I think, would be the one anyway. And you've had a great start. We wish you the best for the rest of the week. Thanks a million,
Ruby. Thanks. Thank you.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Ruby, really interesting listening to Jessica Harrington there. And there'll be a lot of coaches listening. Sometimes we can overcoach. It was amazing to hear her saying she barely spoke to Shane Foley today. You know, just left him do his thing. And I worry when we come out of this, coaches have been so pepped up that they're going to start overcoaching. When you have one of the best there in the business getting winners today, just nearly stepping back.
Yeah, that's fine. I agree with you, Donica, but if someone's going to give you a free hand like Jesse gave Shane Foley, I was lucky that William Mullins always gave me the same. But then you have to be open to saying you were wrong and owning your own mistakes and coming back in. And if Shane Foley got it wrong on one of those horses today, Jessica Harrington's ringing her before she rang him to say, sorry, boss, I made a mistake on that one. I should have done X, Y, or Z. And then you'll always be given the free rope to make those decisions if you can realise where your own mistakes are. And when you're making the mistakes, people will trust you to do the right thing. I hated getting too many instructions. I think everything can be overtaught, especially in horse racing. And I think, I don't know, every sport is different, but I even when I watch rugby matches and GA matches, you're thinking, why didn't they take the open shot, or why didn't they go run that move? It's because it's so coached. I think riding is different; it's individual, and you have to ride what's in front of you. But I loved it when I got free reins like that.
I'd say you're very comfortable with accountability, though, Ruby, as well, because you're on your own.
Yeah, but I think if you haven't realised your own mistake, You've no chance of getting it right. If you don't know you've made a mistake and put your hand up, what chance have you got? It's easy. And even when you ride winners, Marie, you have to know, you have to realise you've done things wrong.
Well, very conveniently, we have a coach on the line to talk about comeback training today, but we might also put accountability to him as well. Vinnie Perth, manager of Dundalk, who is back training today, is on the line. Vinnie, how are you?
Yeah, all good. Great to be back. And yeah, accountability is certainly there at the moment as well, to be fair. No, it's just great to be back. We had our players all lined up after being tested today. We had a sort of real strict regime in place, and it was like a headmaster opening the doors. He just went running. It was like managing an under-12 team, not a professional football club. They went running onto the pitch and kicking balls off crossbars and everywhere. It was crazy. It was crazy.
That sounds absolutely joyful, I have to say. And then from a coach point of view, what was it like? Donica mentioned a little bit earlier that perhaps some coaches might kind of overcoach things, be too enthusiastic about the job that they have to do because they have been off for a little while.
Yeah, I suppose we're all different. Like people use the lockdown to read up on books and listen to podcasts and do certain things. But for me, there was times in it where I just felt you needed to switch off. There was almost too much going on. And you know, and it's been 12 weeks since we've been on the training ground, so I haven't read anything. I've read things that probably I feel would improve me, or listen to things, but I haven't reinvented the wheel in them 12 weeks. And so you do need to be careful. You need to be careful. Yes, it was a time to improve yourself, but you know, players, especially top end players, would smell a rat if you walked onto the training ground. And all of a sudden you were pretending you were Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp. You've got to be sort of true to yourself as best you can.
Finney, you said when you were ominous a few weeks back that they had the GPS units on the guys, and some of them you felt were overdoing it. They were the modern day players. When you looked at them today, did they look fit? I know you said they were keen and enthusiastic, but how did they look as a bunch to you?
To be honest, yeah, by and large, like, I mean, the it's different. If we did a 12-week layoff, you'd expect players to be in sort of wherever they go nowadays, Dubai or Vegas or whatever, and you know, you'd be looking for, you know, checking people's the size of their tummies and that. So it has been different in that sense. It's been lockdown, so they've been well trained, and we've been able to manage them. Modern technology now, as in we can see their GPS, and we've had to take them away. So we've given them 5 days off a couple of weeks ago, just to completely switch off, away from training and different bits and pieces. So they were in really good condition. I'd like the sort of old school coach in me would like to check their body fats, but they were glad to know I wasn't able to do that, or certainly instruct someone to do that.
So, Vinnie, obviously they come back fitting well, and there's areas that you'd like them to improve, but what's the touch like? Obviously a skill sport like hurling, how was their touch?
Yeah, it was really noticeable today. The two things, I suppose, they've been doing a lot of running and a lot of, you know, cardio, individual cardio. But for, I suppose, the best way you can explain it is, I think everyone know what a rondo is, or effectively a piggy in the middle. And when you're doing that, you can see that it's been 12 weeks. You know, some people have just naturally just a good touch. But two things was very noticeable is that people were blowing in the you know, really struggling in terms of the physical side of it. And the touch was just off. So you can train on your own as much as you can, as much as you want. But in a team sport, or a sport that's played under pressure, as in somebody closing you down, it's very, very noticeable. That they've had 12 weeks off, it was very noticeable.
Finney, on Friday, the pathway to return to training was sent out with action points for the different clubs to consider. Now that you're back, what do you think of what was outlined?
I suppose we got two guidance. Friday was sort of, you know, we've moved on, even as a society, a lot more shops, etc., opened up. But we've been working towards really strict guidelines in terms of how we can train today. Our players have been tested every Monday for the last 2 weeks. We had a tour test today. So that gave a lot of confidence to our own players, even mixing with each other. We're tested every three days. We're tested again on Thursday. So just listening to the guys and talking about swimming earlier on to you and how the protocols are really, really in place. And then it looks like sort of amateur football next Monday are sort of allowed to get back 7 days later. You know, we did mention accountability earlier on. I wouldn't be overly comfortable. I think high-end sport should be back at the moment because of, I mean, we two independent people checking that we've done everything right today, sent in by the FEI, which we welcome. We spent, as a club, thousands on, you know, stations for sanitising, wash hand basins, all extra stuff that's needed. And I'd be concerned that it feels like we were dismissing sport 3 or 4 weeks ago, as in it's probably not going to happen for the rest of the year. And now I feel like we're rushing very, very quickly. So probably contradicting myself a couple of weeks ago, I was disappointed by some of the things were said. But I'd be a little bit concerned about amateurs rushing back into a sporting environment. I think that would be concerned as a parent. I'd be concerned sending, you know, people in, because I'm not sure every club in the country or sporting organisation can have the same controls as we could have.
Some of the points in the document sent out was to identify potential training venues, identify how many teams want to return to training, inform all club members that it's going to be coming back in a couple of weeks. Just from a pure practical point of view then of what you were doing today, do you think it'll be too difficult to see that being rolled out all across Ireland?
Well, it's not that we're in Dundalk or the four League of Ireland clubs are, you know, experts or able to do certain things a certain way. That wouldn't be a concern. Obviously, so many clubs, but you've got clubs with maybe 50 teams in it, and they're all amateur. And even, you know, producing documents of safety assessments of your ground, and I just want to make sure that there's somebody there to check that safety document. We've over in soccer, we've over 1,400 clubs in the country, and if 1,400 of them all agreed to send in a safety assessment of their grounds, never mind how they're going to train, it would take 3 or 4 months to read all of them documents to make sure they're all up to the level they should be. So unless COVID is gone, or it's to a social distance is still existing, and I'd be worried about the amateur side of it. I think that might be rushed, but certainly, I mean, it was only last Friday, you know, the Department of Sport gave the green light for top end athletes, you know, Olympic athletes under controlled environments to return to sport. And I'd be concerned that the rest of sort of amateur sports don't rush back without having the correct procedures in place at the moment.
Finney, obviously yourself, Shamrock Rovers, Derry City and Bowes are all back training because of European qualified teams, but everyone trains for an end goal. Have you any idea when you might be able to play a game, or when you're going to have to play a game, or when games are going to start?
No, and I suppose that's the biggest challenge. You're looking at 4 to 6 weeks hoping that you play certain games. We don't know where European football stands. So that's going to be the challenge. Yes, the players are excited to be back this week. But, I mean, you know, every sportsman needs a goal, needs something to be driven towards to get the very best out of themselves. So that is going to be a challenge. And I don't see, I suppose as a league, we haven't agreed to return yet. And that is a problem. And also, in terms of Champions League football that we're in, the other clubs are in Europa League. There's no real definite dates. There is confusion. It looks like the rest of the world is opening back up, but the rest of Europe will allow a certain amount of flights in. But, I mean, if it was happening under current restrictions, I don't think any club could fly to Ireland without taking 2 weeks quarantine. So there'd have to be permission granted. Same in the UK. So it is concerning. It is a fear that we don't have a goal. It is a fear that we may not have soccer back in this country at a professional level. So, but we've got to, you know, yourself, you've got to be as professional as you can and ultimately drive the group with the best way I can to be ready for when that day comes.
Finny, it seems like Thursday is going to be a huge day. Everyone is hoping the FAI will present a financial compensation package for clubs that will be financially viable. Do you think it will be? Are you confident that it will be?
No, I don't think you can be confident. You're hopeful. You're hoping that people are open-minded about getting back. But you also have to understand that, you know, League of Ireland has been left behind by the FAI in the last sort of 15 to 20 years. And we all know the reasons for that. There's no doubt there's the change at the top of the FAI has put League of Ireland back sort of where it should be. We should be promoting our own football, our own nation. We should be, yes, it's great when we have Irish lads in the Premiership or any other top league around the world, but there's no doubt we're there now or we're being listened to and we're sort of part of the discussion. And at the very top of the FAI are trying to help League of Ireland football. But a lot of clubs are in really big trouble and playing behind closed doors, playing, you know, with no sort of future mapped out. It is a concern for a lot of clubs. I just hope that the FAI can come up with something that's workable for everybody. But we're in a very, very difficult situation. And as I said, it needs people to be open and probably willing to take a risk because all of a sudden, maybe people will be in grounds. I heard you speaking earlier. Maybe people will be in grounds, but we're so reliant in this league on gate receipts that we really do need a hand. And it's going to take some serious talks. But I know Thursday is being deemed as D-Day for League of Ireland. I think what will happen is, because it's just part-time, there's amateur in our league as well, I think we'll probably all go away from Thursday and we'll probably need another couple of weeks just to get everything lined up. So I think it'll be a lot longer than this week before everything is sorted out.
Vinny, if some clubs decided to opt out and not continue for the rest of the season, would you, as a manager and Dundalk as a club, be comfortable playing in the league without all the clubs?
I mean, look, Dundalk are ready to play. We're such a well-structured club. We've got owners who care about not just Dundalk, but the league. They will help in every way possible. I think there's a big fear of mine that people fall out of habit of going to sport. So, you know, the guys who go down to, whether it's Richmond Park, Tolga Park, Dundalk, have 2-3 points, watch a match. Then people could be lost because you'll find a new habit on Friday nights. And God forbid, they might end up going watching racing or something. But
That's the idea, Vinny. That's what you have to be back for. Get in there.
Yeah. But there is sense to that, getting back in there. And even worse, go back and watch some rugby. But
God, no.
We have to be so careful that we don't lose. We don't have a big fan base. So we have to be careful that we do everything to get them back. But it is a difficult one, Maria. I don't know the answer to that. We if the sport integrity of the league is gone, in the sense of, you know, it's only, instead of a 10-team league, it's only a 7-team, and what does that mean? We don't know, and that's where we've got a difficult couple of weeks ahead of us. We are the only summer football league in Europe that's not back, or at least have a return date. And it would be embarrassing for us as a sort of soccer nation if we allowed that happen. And we consider Ireland, like, Irish public. Like, soccer is the most participated sport in this country. And even when you look at the government announcement, it's about 15 players getting back on the pitch. Now, maybe I'm a cynic, but that's how many people play, you know, GAA. And I don't criticise the GAA for being at the very, very top table. I'm sort of jealous of them. But soccer in this country isn't. And we need to get ourselves there because, as I said, it's the most participated sport in the country. And I think sometimes people forget that.
Well, Vinny, I think that is very well said. And we're all going to be waiting and watching on Thursday to see what happens. And we hope that we get the domestic league back out there soon, because I, for one, am sick of talking about bad news stories when it comes to Irish football. Thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I found that fascinating in listening to Vinny Perth, guys. Just so honest. And the bit I took away was just him speaking as a parent. That you, with new measures in place, you would be nervous about, like, he's seeing what they have to do to get out in the pitches. And he's kind of thinking, for his own kids, can you do that?
Yeah, but the bit I took away from it was that he slagged racing and rugby.
He certainly did.
Well, maybe
the only one that hasn't got slagged tonight is soccer. So we're delighted to be joined by Fergal Brennan. Fergal, how are you?
Not too bad, yourself?
We're great. We were chatting earlier on about La Liga, looking at using virtual crowds. Is this a new type of soccer? A new type of normal we're all going to have to get used to?
Potentially. The Premier League are in talks with Sky and BT this week about adding it to the Premier League games when they come back next week. Now, as it stands, as you say, in La Liga and the Bundesliga in Germany, fans have got the option, if they're watching at home, they can switch the crowd artificial noise on. So it'll be pre-programmed reactions to goals, pre-programmed reactions to refereeing decisions, that kind of thing. And obviously somebody will be sitting there watching the game and trying to make sure that, you know, the production cues are lined up correctly. It did work relatively well last weekend in the Bundesliga. It was used in Bayern Munich's game and a few others. I think this is one of those types of things where a lot of fans are going to be against it. And I think so many fans are so desperate to get football back in front of them of a weekend that they might be willing to give it a go. It could become the new commentary on, commentary off argument that people have, where some people like to listen to two commentators talking and kind of rabbiting on in the background, and some people prefer to, you know, make their own commentary during a game.
Fergal, I can't wait to start talking about transfers and what managers say and all the rest. So today, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said that Manchester United will avoid buying rotten apples, which I find very hard to believe when you think that they spent £484 million in the last 5 years on transfers.
Yeah, I think it's quite targeted. Solskjaer is kind of learning the law of the jungle about being a Premier League manager in the last few months. Alexis Sanchez has obviously been the big one that he's been asked about a few times. He's away on loan at Inter Milan at the moment. Inter Milan are not likely to make that into a permanent deal, meaning he's probably going to go back to Manchester United. There's question marks over Paul Pogba still. Real Madrid, Juventus are both potentially interested in him. So I think we're going to see a very practical season with a real reduction in big purchases due to the lack of budget and lack of transfer funding that clubs are going to have on the back of the coronavirus pandemic. But I think Solskjaer's comments are actually probably quite music to a lot of United fans' ears. They've seen the impact that someone like Bruno Fernandes has had when he came in January. An excellent professional, an international, someone that comes in and immediately improves the team without any sort of baggage that he brings with him that signings they've made in the last few years potentially have had. That being said, I think in general the players that Solskjaer has brought to the club, Harry Maguire, Aaron Wan-Bissaka last summer, will be two examples of fitting that profile of excellent players but without this potential negativity of maybe being a bit of a bad apple.
Do you think he was hinting though at some of the rotten apples he's going to try and get rid of?
I do, but I do think his hands are tied in a lot of senses, because someone like Sanchez or someone like Pogba, not only are they going to command a big fee to get them out of the club, it's huge wages that you're going to have to convince another team to take on. Obviously, Sanchez's situation has been well covered. He's the highest paid player in the Premier League. I think it's £220,000 a week he's on. Pogba's on over £150,000 a week. Yes, I think he is, you know, not so subtly hinting at certain players that he could or would like to move on. But it's going to be a very, very hard sell for him this summer to say to clubs, I don't want them, here when we're pushing for Champions League. But trust me, that you know they're the missing piece in the jigsaw that you need to spend a big transfer fee on, and most importantly, shell out big wages for.
Klopp was quite interesting today when he was talking about Timo Werner and transfers in general. All clubs are losing money. How do I discuss with the players about things like salary waivers and on the other hand buy a player for 50, 60 million? We'd have to explain. Doesn't really bode well for Liverpool buying any new players. If anybody is a fan of Mbappe, he might not be coming that way.
Yeah, Klopp can always be relied upon to talk with a lot of balance, particularly about money in the game and the way transfers are done. And I think he's absolutely right. Obviously, Werner's the big news in the last few days. Liverpool have essentially said that they won't be buying him. They're not willing to meet his €60 million release clause. And I think that will be the pattern across the summer. Teams have identified targets a few months ago. That's now been torn up, thrown in the bin, rewritten, readdressed. And there's going to be a lot of players that are right at the top of the game, and their value won't have diminished. Sorry, there's a report out today from UEFA saying that Mbappe is still the most highly rated valued player in world football, just over 250 million. So there's a lot of players that their value stays the same, particularly if they've got 2 or 3 years left on their contract. And Klopp, as I say, is quite sensible in these situations. He isn't going to be held to ransom over an unbelievable fee when he knows that Liverpool are still going to continue to be the team that he's got at the moment. And in 12 months' time, that value might come down if a contract isn't signed by a certain player at a certain club.
Fergal, Arsenal have always been good at keeping their purse strings sort of tight, but there is rumours today that they have been connected with Atletico Madrid's Thomas Partey. Could you see that one going through?
Potentially. Again, the release clause is the factor here with a lot of players at La Liga clubs. He's got a €50 million release clause with Atletico Madrid. Interestingly, some of his Ghana teammates have come out in the last few days encouraging him to move to the Premier League, and particularly to Arsenal. They've not been shying away from naming Arsenal as the club they'd like to see him at, prove himself in the Premier League, and that's the kind of line they're going with. Atletico will fight tooth and nail to keep him. As I say, contracts are king in these situations. He's still got another 2.5 years to go in Madrid. But given the way he's performed for them, you know, obviously, Marie won't thank me for reminding her the Champions League game against Liverpool. He was excellent. We've seen him grow in the last 18 months into one of the best defensive midfielders in world football. And with that in mind, 50 million might seem very reasonable for that type of player. United, Arsenal will both have a little look at him. Liverpool, potentially. But so much depends on how the Premier League ends and who qualifies for the Champions League, who qualifies for Europa League, because money is tight, and those injections of 30, 40 million from European qualification will make all the difference.
And players might not want to go to Manchester City depending on the outcome of their appeal against the 2-year ban from European Commission that started today in the Court of Arbitration for Sport. How's this expected to go, Fergal?
Long-winded. One of the best things that I've seen this morning from it is the judge from the Court of Arbitration. The only confirmation he's given today is that the video conference system was working well. Expect this one to drag right the way until the summer. They've already said that it'll be mid-August before a verdict is reached. Obviously, City won't thank them for that, because that means that they're not going to be able to plan for potentially playing in the Champions League or not playing in the Champions League next season. As it stands, the ban is still in place. The next 2 years of Champions League football, City will be exempt from because of the alleged financial fair play violation. This could go right to the wire. Due to the fact that CAS and UEFA are known to let these things run, and also that they're not really being forced into a decision, we could be in a situation where a decision gets made in the middle of August and City have to scramble around and get ready for the Champions League. I've said all along, I do think the ban will remain in place, but I can see it being suspended for 12 months, kicked further down the road. UEFA have to do something. I think if UEFA just dismissed this ban completely, then FFP ceases to have any sort of effect on football.
And would the implications be serious for players that are in City? Will guys look to get out if this ban is upheld?
Potentially, there's been talks or leaks about Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne and possibly Sergio Aguero. At this stage, I think everything's still so up in the air. But if the ban is upheld, contractually, there's a lot of issues, even with regards to Pep Guardiola, that because certain aspects of their contract won't be met by the clubs, they can potentially push a legal case to leave. I think at the moment, the City are very much playing the wait-and-see game, with this idea of we're hopeful that the ban will at least get suspended and address it in 12 months' time. But at some point, City and the board and the ownership are going to have to face what's coming down the road from UEFA. I think they would just like to move it along another 12 months. But there will be a lot of speculation about players leaving. But until there's some sort of firm decision from UEFA, I can't see anything happening. Because if they were to keep their place in the Champions League, none of those players would leave.
Yeah, Fergal, thanks so much for joining us. Game on. It's great to be talking about transfers, speculation, everything again. Mind yourself.
No worries, thanks.
Thanks, Fergal. Ruby, we have a text in. I presume it's for you anyway. Guineas at Newmarket without a crowd was rubbish. Ascot will be brutal.
Virtual crowd racing.
They'll be different, Marie, but so is every sport. I mean, you have to make the best of what's available. Yeah, there wasn't a whole pile of atmosphere, but at least there was something to watch and something we didn't know the result of before it happened. Not a replay.
Okay, guys, that is all we have time for.
Game on 2FM.